And we are at the top of the hour now, so at this time I would like to introduce our presenter for today. We have Dr. Dawn Vogt presenting for us. She's a research psychologist at the National Center for PTSD, located at VA Boston Healthcare System, and an associate professor of psychiatry at the Boston University School of Medicine. So at this time I'd like to turn it over to you, Dr. Vogt.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Molly. I'm just going to pull up my slides right now. So I'm so pleased to be able to talk to you about the work we've been doing for the Veterans Metrics Initiative study, or what we call the TVMI study. And as I'll talk about, this study really takes a very different approach to the investigation of veteran reintegration than prior research has. And really the goal, we think what this study will be able to do is provide novel information about veterans' needs as they transition from military service, with the idea that this will help us better support veterans throughout that transition. So before I launch into the presentation, I'd just like to get a little information about the audience. So I have a couple poll questions, and so Molly should be able to wrap this up if people can indicate their primary role in VA, and then Molly will show that for the group.
Thank you. So for our attendees, just go ahead and click the circle right there on your screen that corresponds to your response. Those answer options are student, trainee, or fellow, clinician, researcher, administrator, manager, or policymaker, or other. And it looks like we've had about three-quarters of our audience respond. So at this time, I'm going to go ahead and close out that poll and share those results. Looks like 6% of our respondents are student, trainee, or fellow, 11% clinician, 51% researcher, 20% administrator, manager, or policymaker, and 11% other. So thank you to those respondents. Dawn, do you have any commentary, or do you want me to jump into the next one?
No, thank you. That's useful. So it seems like there's a variety of different folks. Maybe you can just go to the we can go to the next one. So the background here is just – so over the past year or so, we've really started talking about this project and trying to get the word out about it. And I'm just curious to know, among those folks who are listening in today, how many of you have heard of the Veterans Metrics Initiative study before? So if folks could just answer that, that'd be helpful.
Thank you. It looks like we're right around the – three-quarters mark for respondents. That's great. I'm going to go ahead and close this out and share those results. Dawn, it looks like you have your work cut out for you. 14% selected yes and 86% selected no.
Okay, great. Good. So, excellent. So I am excited to talk to you about this project, and so for those of you who are familiar, hopefully there'll be a little bit of new information, but we are trying to get the word out about this study because we do think it does some really novel things, and as I'll discuss later, the idea is ultimately this will become a public use data set that other researchers can use to address secondary research questions. So that's another reason we want to get the word out. But I'm going to do three things today. I have three goals for the presentation. One is that I want to just give an overview of what this project is about. I want to talk a little bit in a little more depth about our multidimensional approach to assessing veterans' well-being in this study of how veterans' well-being changes throughout military to civilian transition. We think that's one of the really novel aspects of the study is the approach we're taking to measuring well-being. And then I'm going to conclude with just a little bit of an overview of what our findings look like on veterans' well-being from our baseline assessment, which I'll talk about more, but basically is within about 3 months of separation, what are we learning about how veterans' well-being looks and what might be some areas where they could use some more support. So in terms of background, the TVMI study is a public-private research partnership. It was brought together by Henry Jackson Foundation. And so it's a partnered project in a number of different ways. We really took a crowdfunding approach to the study. We have funding from multiple different funders, as I'll show you, including both public and private sector funding. So HSR&D is one of our funders, but we have a number of other funders as well. Also, when Henry Jackson Foundation put together, brought together this project, they wanted to bring researchers from multiple different settings together with the idea that the researchers would have different perspectives to share and bring to the table. And so we have collaborators from VA, DOD, university, and private industry. And then the final aspect of the study that is partnered is our multi-sector data collection strategy, and I'll talk you through that, but that was something we gave a lot of thought to because we wanted to make sure that we would collect our data in such a way that we could share it among our immediate team members and that ultimately this could become a data set that would be broadly accessible to other researchers down the road for secondary analysis. So it was a little bit tricky figuring out how to do that, but I think we came up with a pretty good solution. But when we were brought together by Henry Jackson Foundation, they basically brought together the researchers and said, well, listen, we know there's a lot of groups that provide programs, services, and support to veterans, certainly not just VA, but a lot of others out in the community. And one of the, big questions that we have is, what is working to improve veterans' post-military readjustment? And so in thinking about how we could answer this question, one of the key questions we knew we needed to address first and foremost is to get a better understanding of what veterans' needs are as they transition from service. So here's the slide with the different funders for this project. As I mentioned, we have multiple funders. And here's a slide that shows the study team. So on the left-hand side are the co-PIs for the study. So we've got folks from ICF International, that's the private industry. We've got three investigators from VA, so myself as well as Laurel Copeland and Aaron Finley, who are health services researchers in VA. We've got a collaborator from Penn State, and we've got a collaborator from DOD. And at the center of this project, as I mentioned, is Henry Jackson Foundation. So Cynthia Gilman has headed up that work, and they have done a tremendous job of securing funding and administering the study. And then on the right-hand side of this slide are my team members. So here in Boston, we've headed up a number of aspects of the study, and these are the folks who have been working with me on it. The overall project has three primary aims. So the first aim is to document veterans' well-being throughout the military to civilian transition and to identify factors that distinguish those who do well as they separate from service compared to those who do not. Other aims of the study include describing the programs and services that veterans use to help them throughout this transition, both within VA and outside of VA, and to decompose those programs and services into their core components. So to be able to identify what are the common components across different types of programs and services that are most helpful to veterans as part of transition and reintegration programs. So today I'm going to focus on this first aim. So this is the aim that I've been heading up, and with support from the other VA investigators and other members of the team. So that's what I'm going to focus on here. I know that this is a very busy slide, but I wanted to show it to you because it really, I think, very nicely shows the different ways in which this project is partnered. So if you can see my cursor there, I think Molly said you'd be able to. You can see the way that the money flows. So with a project like this that's very complicated, certain funds can only go to certain folks. So you can see here that the HSR&D funding we have is flowing to the VA investigators and supporting the work of the VA investigators, whereas the other sources of funding we have flow through Henry Jackson Foundation and then to other team members. You can see that we have each of the different research settings represented along with our PI. And then the bottom half of this slide, this figure, really shows our data collection strategy. So I mentioned that we put a lot of work into thinking through how this would work. And ultimately what we decided, you know, we wanted to do this longitudinal assessment of veterans' well-being throughout transition. We knew that we wanted to get a nationally representative sample of separating veterans. And we knew that we could do that in the federal setting. So here in VA Boston, I headed up the process of identifying a nationally representative sample of people leaving service, and I reached out to those folks and notified them about the study opportunity. We then had folks who were interested in participating in the study go to our private industry collaborators website where they could provide their contact information and complete the assessments on their web-based platform. So they have a really nice web-based platform where we could collect the data. And so the nice thing about the study design was that it allowed us to get a nationally representative sample, something that is very hard for people outside of the federal setting to do. And it allowed us to take advantage of this nice web-based platform that ICF International had and produce a data set that will be broadly shareable among both the current research team and to other folks down the road. Moving on, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, really what we were trying to do in designing this study. We really wanted to address a number of existing knowledge gaps. So there was a really nice RAND report that came out a couple years ago where they were reviewing the research that's been done on post 9/11 veterans readjustment. And they reached a number of conclusions, one of which is that there have been a lot of good studies that have been done to better understand post 9/11 veterans' health and well-being. There's been fewer longitudinal studies implemented to look at how veterans' health and well-being changes over time, and they identified the fact that there's really been no large-scale study of the military to civilian transition process as a key gap in the literature, that we really didn't know a lot about how veterans' well-being changes throughout that transition and reintegration process. So we decided that that was something that we wanted to focus on in this study. Another knowledge gap is that a lot of the research that's been done, understandably, has focused on veterans' health. So we're trying to understand, obviously in VHA, we're very interested in knowing what does veterans' health look like, and then, you know, so that we can better provide health services to meet their needs. There's been some research looking at, you know, health-related quality of life, but there really hasn't been as much attention to how veterans are faring in other life domains, or I should say there hasn't been equal attention to how veterans are faring in other life domains independent of their health. There's been research looking at how health impacts other life domains, but not so much looking at these separate life domains, such as veterans' vocational well-being, their financial well-being, and their social well-being. And so we decided we wanted to take a multidimensional perspective that would look at how veterans were doing across all of these domains. We also, I know that a lot of the work that's been done on veterans' post-military well-being focuses on veterans who've been deployed. And that makes sense because often those are the folks who are at greatest risk for health problems. However, there's somewhere between 20 and 40% of folks who don't experience deployments during military service, and we knew that we wanted to include those folks in our study so we could look at what their transition looks like as well. And then finally, there really hasn't been research that has done this common program components type of analysis to really figure out what are the components of programs, across lots of different types of programs, that really are the most helpful to veterans. And that was another piece we tackled in this study. I'm just going to spend a few more minutes talking about why we're expanding our focus beyond health. One reason is that, as I mentioned, we know a lot about veterans' post-military health, and especially their psychopathology. There have been excellent studies documenting the prevalence of various mental health and other conditions among veterans. So we didn't want to duplicate what's already been done very well. And that said, many veterans don't experience health problems. So we know that lots of veterans don't experience health problems, but they may not necessarily be thriving. And so we wanted to be able to look at all veterans and try to understand how they were doing in terms of their broader well-being, and I'll talk about how we measured that shortly. We also know that, you know, well-being is a multidimensional concept. So there are veterans, and we hear about this anecdotally, who have health problems who may be doing pretty well in some parts of their lives. And so we wanted to be able to provide a multidimensional perspective that would show us what are the areas of strength and weakness across different aspects of veterans' lives. And then finally, veterans often talk about, we all know, concerns beyond their health. And so we really wanted to pay attention to what were the different parts of veterans' lives that might also be important to them beyond their health. As I mentioned, this is a longitudinal study. We enrolled approximately 10,000 recently separated service members in the study within about 3 months of separation. And so we are doing an intensive follow-up where every 6 months we resurvey veterans for the first 3 years after they separate so that we can understand how veterans' program use and their well-being changes throughout that transition and reintegration process. I'm not going to go over all these measures, but I just wanted to give a flavor for the types of things we're measuring in this study. We are tracking information about the demographic and military characteristics of participants. We're really interested in trying to identify folks that are going to be at risk for poor well-being. And so we want to know if there are particular groups of veterans who do or don't do as well. We're really interested in the impact of veterans' experiences of stress and trauma before military service, during, and after military service on their well-being throughout transition. So we do a pretty fairly intensive assessment around stress and trauma exposure. And we're interested in the factors that might, resources that might protect veterans during this, you know, somewhat often stressful transition period. We're looking at social support. We're looking at baseline resilience. We want to see if these, how they work and if they're protective. We're assessing well-being. I'll talk about that. And we do beyond the assessment of health in the well-being inventory that we use, we supplemented that with additional assessment around mental health and other conditions, traumatic brain injury, that we know tend to be concerns for this population. So PTSD, depression, anxiety, we're looking at these kinds of factors. And then obviously we're studying veterans program use, as I mentioned. So now I'm going to pause and shift gears, and I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about our multidimensional assessment of well-being. So I talked about AIM-1 and the fact that that AIM is really focused on assessing how veterans do as they separate from military service. So when we were talking about this AIM, we spent a lot of time talking about, you know, which are going to be the veterans that are going to have a successful reintegration. And so we needed to get very concrete about, well, what do we mean by well-being? What do we mean by a life well-lived? So we spent a lot of time looking at the literature, looking at what scholars have written about and measures that they've used to assess well-being, quality of life, all of these, you know, related terms, so that we could figure out what was the best way to measure well-being for this study. And what we really discovered is that there's not a lot of consensus in what aspects scholars have focused on and measured in prior research. So the analogy I like to talk about here is the story of the six blind men and the elephant. You know, with the idea that if you think about well-being as it's a really big animal, and how people define what they're, how people define it really depends on what perspective they're coming from, where they're grabbing it. And they're going to define it a different way depending on how they approach it. And that's really what has seemed to happen in the broader literature. There aren't a lot of approaches that really take the bigger picture. And we knew that we wanted to take a bigger picture perspective in our work. Another, some other writing we came across that we found really helpful, there was a review of the well-being research where the author said, well, one of the things we're seeing is that how people talk about well-being really depends on whether they're talking about the factors that set the stage for well-being, or what they call the inputs and processes, or these broader well-being outcomes, or what they called achieved well-being. So for the inputs, these can include factors such as life circumstances. We talk about these as the building blocks of well-being. Life circumstances, capability, and then cognitive evaluations, how people look at or perceive their life circumstances. With the outcomes, these are these broader concepts like whether people are experiencing positive emotions, have an overall sense of meaning, purpose, and personal growth. We decided for our study that we wanted to look at the building blocks. So we're more interested in looking at things that they talked about as inputs and processes. And one of the reasons is that knowing, for example, that veterans experience a lot of positive emotions, that's useful, but then we have to ask more questions, right? Because we have to figure out, well, what is it that is driving those emotions so that the information will be actionable? The idea that if we're assessing the building blocks of well-being, that information is going to be actionable. We can implement interventions to try to help veterans get those building blocks in place. So we decided for this study we were going to focus on these building blocks. One area where we did see some consensus is with researchers that have taken a broader approach to well-being, both in the veteran and civilian literature, do seem to coalesce around the fact that there are four key general domains of well-being. Obviously, health is one of them, but also vocational well-being. So, for example, you know, people's job circumstances, and then obviously finances can flow from that, and then social relationships. So it's really these four domains, and we like that, and so we adopted that in this study. Another perspective that we found incredibly useful was that of a woman named Madeline Gladys and her colleagues. And she basically was writing in the quality of life research, and she said, look, if you want to understand how people are doing in life, you need to know three things about them. You need to know what their status is, what are their objective life circumstances. So if you think in the vocational domain, do they have a job? You need to know how they're functioning in their different life roles. So what is their occupational functioning like? And you need to know how satisfied they are with how things are going in their life. So are they satisfied with their job, for example? And so we liked that a lot, and what we ultimately decided to do was to merge these two perspectives and create a broad, multidimensional concept model that had 12 different components. And so coming back to the elephant I talked about earlier, the idea, what we were trying to achieve with this model was to bring together the building blocks of well-being in one place. And we wanted to measure each of these. And by crossing these two different frameworks, we had very clear things that we wanted to measure in each of the components and that are measured in our approach. So I'm not going to take you through each of these, but this is just to give you a flavor for the different types of things that we assess in this framework. We Once we had that figured out, we went back to the measures and looked to see if there were measures that could get at each of these things. And what we discovered was that there really weren't any measures out there that kind of did all the things we wanted to do. And so I won't get into details on what we saw as the limitations, but I will say that we decided to develop our own measurement tool, and it's called the Wellbeing Inventory. And so that is one of the products of the Veteran Metrics Initiative study. That said, you know, we don't think this is a perfect tool. So I love this slide because I think it really highlights the fact that, you know, this tool has many strengths. It can't do everything, but we think that the pros really do outweigh the cons for our purposes. And have been very excited because a number of groups have expressed interest in using the Wellbeing Inventory in other research projects. So it's been finalized. Folks are using it. And so if there's anyone on the phone who's interested in using this for your purposes, please let me know. We are more than happy to share the Wellbeing Inventory along with the manual with anyone who's interested. We went through a very robust development and validation strategy that's described in the manual. And the other thing that we've been thinking a lot about recently is whether there might be a way to translate information from this tool into targeted referrals. So the idea that we might be able to produce a profile like I am showing here, of how people are doing, perceive that they're doing in different, on different components of well-being, and that might trigger particular referrals for types of programs and services that might be particularly beneficial to veterans. So we're in the process of exploring that right now. So I'm going to pause for a second. I know I'm going pretty fast, but I wanted to make sure I got to hit on the high points of the project, and there's a lot to talk about. And I'm going to use the rest of my time to talk about some of the findings that we're getting. And these are preliminary findings, unweighted findings, from our first assessment time point, which is approximately 3 months, up to 3 months after separation from service. And these analyses really address the question of how veterans are faring as they walk out the door and begin their civilian life. So these analyses address Study Aim 1, just to remind you, which is to document the well-being of veterans as they transition from military service and to identify factors that predict higher or lower well-being, with the idea that we can identify if there are groups of veterans who are more at risk for having difficult reintegrations and hopefully target those groups with the types of support that might bolster their well-being as they begin the transition process. So I mentioned that we had about 10,000 veterans in our cohort. We had 9,566 who completed our first assessment in full, so it's a web-based survey. That was 22% of everyone we invited, which probably seems like a pretty low response rate, but it actually is very, very typical for post-9/11 veterans. And I'll talk about the non-response bias issue shortly. But we were actually pretty pleased with this response rate. And then here are just some demographics of the study completers. So a couple points to talk about. One is we surveyed a wide range of veterans. Basically, one of our data polls was everyone who was separating during the time point that we initiated the study in the fall of 2016. So we had folks from all branches of service. We also wanted to include in our sample folks who were coming off an activation, so National Guard and reservists who were coming off an activation. And so we also have those folks in our sample, some of whom may be continuing to serve in the National Guard or Reserve. You'll see that we have representation, a range of folks in terms of rank, race and ethnicity, and gender. And because of the large sample size, we'll be able to do analyses looking at how veterans' experiences differ based on these groups. We were really interested, you know, our goal in drawing a nationally representative sampling frame was to produce findings that would be broadly representative of the larger population. And so we are very interested in knowing the extent to which the sample we obtained was representative of the larger population. And we were really pleased to see that, for the most part, it was pretty representative. We had slightly lower participation by enlisted personnel, probably, you know, not enough to really change the story. But we are working on developing non-response bias weights that we will use to adjust our analyses. So what I'm going to present to you today is pretty broad results. So I'm going to present some proportions, average item scores on the different well-being measures. And I'm going to focus on those results that are at least small effects. So with a big sample like this, with 10,000 people, pretty much any analysis we do is going to produce statistically significant results. Some of those results, though, are really small effects and probably not that meaningful. So we set a lower bar on what we were going to focus on. So here are some results for our status indicators. So remember, we have status indicators in the vocational domain, the financial domain, the health domain, and social relationships. And so what you can see here are those results. So for we were really pleased to see that 85% of the veterans in our sample reported that they were in the labor force. That means that they were either working for pay or looking for work. Among the larger sample, 58% of folks were already working for pay within about 3 months of separation. And so, and then if you look at just among those in the labor force, it was 68%. So what that means is that 32% of folks said that they were looking for work but hadn't found it yet. Not that surprising, though, because they were just out of military service. So we think overall that these findings are pretty positive. People are really getting back into the labor force and starting to find jobs. We also found that almost a third of veterans were in school. So we know that many veterans, after they separate from military service, take advantage of their educational benefits, and we're seeing that here, that we've got lots of veterans who report that they're in school. In terms of finances, the picture isn't quite as rosy. So based on veterans' responses, we classified 40% of veterans as having secure finances, 37% at risk, and 23% having clearly problematic finances. So this is an area that probably needs some attention. It's not that surprising, given that many folks are still looking for work, that that, you know, we do have veterans who are reporting some problematic financial status. We hope that as we move out to our later assessments, that we'll begin to see that their finances begin to stabilize more. In terms of health, that's another area to really pay attention to. So we asked veterans about whether they had any physical or mental health conditions. 38% said no, they didn't have either type. 33% that said that they either had some kind of physical or mental health condition that they were dealing with, and 29% said that they were dealing with both physical and mental health conditions. So a pretty high burden of physical and mental health conditions. And I'll present a little more information on that momentarily. Most folks reported that they were in an intimate relationship, many married, almost two-thirds parents. We also have, and I'm sorry this bar kind of fades into the background, but we have questions about veterans' broader social involvement. We're really interested in the extent to which they're integrating into their broader community. So we have questions about, beyond their immediate family, how much are they involved in their communities? And you can see that 62% reported that they had at least some involvement in their broader communities, some connections there. What that means, of course, is that almost 40% had none. And sneak peek, when we start looking at these results at the next assessment, which was that 9 months post-separation, we thought we would see greater integration at that time point, and we really didn't see much of a change. So this might be something to pay attention to. So the pie chart here, I talked about these results. On the right, you can see that veterans were more likely to report that they had some kind of chronic physical condition, illness, or disability as they were separating from service than to report a mental condition, illness, or disability. So the physical conditions were more common. We also asked about particular conditions, and these are the things that came up most often. We had a lot reporting chronic pain, about a third reporting sleep problems. And I mentioned earlier that we also administered screens for various mental health conditions, and you can see that a substantial minority of folks screened positive for depression, anxiety, and especially post-traumatic stress disorder and alcohol misuse. So these are definitely things to pay attention to. These are screeners, so there's probably some folks in there that wouldn't ultimately get a diagnosis, but they do suggest that that these are concerns that we should be paying attention to. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about the functioning results, and let me give you some background so you can better understand this slide. So our functioning measures on each of the different domains and subdomains, these are average item scores for the whole sample. And those scores can range from 1, which is the poorest functioning, to 5, which is the best functioning. And so the overall take-home here is that veterans are reporting that they're functioning pretty well in multiple life domains. Where we see veterans reporting having more difficulty is in terms of their financial functioning, their intimate relationship functioning, and then their health functioning and broader social functioning. But still pretty good. And, of course, this is self-report. There's probably a little bit of bias there. We do find that these measures relate to other measures in ways we would expect, so we think that they're getting at something useful. But in any case, we've got a couple areas where they are reporting having some more problems. And then the last set of measures in the well-being inventory assess their satisfaction with how things are going in different life domains. And you can see here that, in general, they're not they're reporting a little less satisfaction, maybe, than they're reporting in terms of their own functioning, but still primarily on the positive end of the spectrum. So this is these are average item scores. The scores range from 1 to 5. 5 is very satisfied. 4 is somewhat satisfied. So you can see that lots of folks approaching or near 4, somewhat satisfied, in many areas of their lives. Where they're reporting less satisfaction is with their financial status and their health. Those are kind of popping as areas they're not feeling as great about. So now, shifting gears a little bit, we ask the question of whether we're seeing different outcomes for veterans based on demographic and military characteristics. So are there particular subgroups of veterans who are reporting higher and lower well-being across different components of our measurement. Some of these findings, I think, are pretty intuitive. So, you know, folks that are older are more likely to report they have a full-time job. They're less likely to be a student, more likely to be a parent, got a greater burden of physical health conditions. These are all not surprising findings. Also, the findings for education, folks who have a college education are doing better financially. They probably have better jobs, so that's not that surprising. We are also finding that enlisted folks are not doing as well as officers. And, you know, there is some overlap, I think, between enlisted status and college education there, so these are not too surprising. And a couple other differences here and there with other military characteristics that we assessed. We looked at whether veterans who reported more warfare exposure during their military service had worse outcomes, and we found, not surprisingly, that they are reporting worse physical and mental health, and some other less health satisfaction, worse intimate relationship functioning. And we wanted to look at how well-being, the relationship among different domains of well-being. So we looked at the extent how veterans reports of what if among veterans who reported that they had some kind of chronic mental health problem, how did they look in terms of their well-being in other life domains? And this is really where we got the most findings. So pretty much consistently, veterans who said they had some kind of mental health problem reported that they just weren't doing as well across pretty much all of the other domains. The one place where we didn't see findings was in terms of our status indicators, which was kind of interesting. So we didn't see an association between reporting that you had a mental health problem and whether people had a job or were in school or their social involvement. So it could be that mental health problems are having an impact on functioning and satisfaction. Maybe they will eventually erode status, but we're not seeing that yet. So we'll be tracking that over time. And then we saw fewer associations with reporting with veterans reporting that they had a chronic physical health problem. So not quite as much there. One of the things I think that was the most interesting about these analyses was where we didn't find differences. So we really weren't finding very meaningful differences based on race or ethnic minority status. We really weren't finding much in terms of gender differences and at baseline or initial well-being as folks separate from service. We thought we would find relationships with reports of military sexual trauma. We didn't find that, although sneak peek, we did see differences when we predicted military, we predicted the time to outcomes, so the 9-month outcomes. So so kind of something interesting going on there where we're not seeing differences among groups as people separate from service, but they're cropping up 6 months later. So, you know, the basic conclusion, I think, there's multiple conclusions here. One is that veterans seem to be overall doing well in a number of areas, particularly in terms of their employment. But there are areas where they could probably use some more support. Finances, obviously, is one where they're not reporting doing as well. Certainly managing mental and physical health conditions, particularly the mental health conditions, seems to come up as something that we need to pay more attention to. Veterans did report functioning less well on intimate relationships than some other domains. You know, they're going through a transition, which is, you know, probably likely to be stressful and may put strain on relationships. So it'll be interesting to see how that evolves over time. And then I talked a little bit about the broader social involvement. So figuring out how veterans can become more integrated in their communities. We know that social support is such a powerful protective factor. And then in terms of predictors of reduced post-transition well-being, having chronic mental health problems, having been enlisted are some of the factors we saw differences. But we saw many, many similarities. And this is what I think is so neat about this study, is that we're going to be able to track people over time and see if paths diverge. So it may be that people start off, that maybe there's a little bit of a honeymoon period, and then we start to see, we start to see people having more difficulties over time, or we start to see particular groups who are more at risk. So we'll be tracking that. We have a number of future directions, other analyses we plan to do with the data. I won't talk through those in detail, but I just wanted to give a flavor for the kinds of things we're going to be doing. And I've included some of the references to some of the key studies that I talked about. And then I think that is that's it. So I know it's a lot of information. If folks have any questions, if anyone's interested in learning more about the well-being inventory or anything about the study, I am more than happy to share information.
Thank you.
So thanks so much. Molly, should I turn it back over to you?
Yeah, that sounds good. We'll go ahead and do Q&A with the audience now. So for any attendees that showed up after the top of the hour, to submit your question or comment, just use the GoToWebinar control panel located on the right-hand side of your screen. Down towards the bottom, you'll see a section labeled questions. Just click the arrow next to that. It will expand the dialog box, and you can type your question or comment in there. So the first question we have, did the study record reasons for loss to follow-up, such as if the veteran became deceased, and were those outcomes categorized by cause of death?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I didn't really spend any time talking about retention in this study, because I was really focusing on the results for the baseline study. I will say that our retention so far has been really very good. And I'm trying to think of what we're looking at, but I think we're looking at something around 75% of folks staying in the study over time with our first few assessments. In fact, we've had to turn people away because we have incentives that we've incentivized, and we have incentives that we provide at each time point. And so we've had to stop recruiting at each time point so that we can then have the resources available to follow up with people. What really makes this study unique is the fact that we're going back to folks so many times, but it also makes it expensive. So we are getting pretty good retention. We are going to be tracking what factors are associated with dropout. And in fact, that's part of the weighted analyses we've been doing, is to try to use the information. We have information on folks who, first of all, didn't decide to do the study at all, because we have information on what the sample looks like in terms of demographics, or the sampling frame, in terms of demographics and military characteristics, so we can compare our responders and non-responders. And then as people drop out over time, we will have all the information that we've been collecting at each time point. So, for instance, we can look at whether veterans who report more health problems or more difficulties with their transition, if those are the types of people who are more likely to drop out. So we haven't really delved into those results yet. We will, in terms of finding out about people that have passed away, we reach out to the veterans. They give us their contact information. We're also gathering information, I think, on folks who contacts that they have, so other people who would know how to reach them. So I do think we have some capacity to follow up on some of that, but I would be happy to follow up with that person if they want more information about what exactly we're going to be doing with that piece.
Thank you for that reply. We do have several questions that just came in. The first actually is a comment. The initiative should reach out to Team Red, White, and Blue, which has its own well-being measure that will be published within the year. The organization is 135,000 members and growing. They are doing something right. I'll be happy to introduce you to their research director, Caroline Angel. So that person is happy to reach out to Dawn offline to talk further about that.
Yeah, that'd be great. I've met with some of the folks from that team in the past, and I had heard they had a pretty neat way of assessing well-being. So Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you. The next question, how did VA have addresses for everyone separating? DOD has that information.
So as a VA investigator, we have access to that information. So the sample was drawn through VADR, which is essentially a mirror of the DMDC, Defense Manpower Data Center, information on separating service members. So we can't survey people who are active duty, or at least I haven't been able to, but we can access samples of separating veterans for our studies.
Thank you. The next question, apologies if I missed the level of detail on broader social involvement. Are you looking at different outcomes based on type of social involvement?
Yeah, so we've got, so our measure of social relationships, we have measures of status, functioning, and satisfaction within intimate relationships, parenting roles, and then broader community. So we have questions about the extent to which people are involved in their community. So are you involved in a book club? Are you, you know, do you have connections in your broader community? Are you involved in a religious community? We have all those kinds of questions. And then we're also assessing functioning and satisfaction in terms of those broader social relationships as well. So we are looking at all of those outcomes separately so that we can see whether there are differential effects in terms of people's different types of social relationships.
Thank you. Not surprised to see veterans doing well at 3 months. I have found that there is a time lag before veterans start to seek help at the VA, usually post 2 years of separation.
Yeah, I think that's one of the conversations we've been having is, you know, we think that, you know, there may be a honeymoon period where folks are very optimistic, things are going pretty well, and then some of the kind of trouble that veterans may have may kind of crop up over time. And so what is exciting about this study is that we can track how veterans' experiences change over time and what some of those predictors might be of those who ultimately go on to do well versus those who don't. Right now, we're funded just to follow folks for 3 years. Of course, we would love to follow them much longer, and we think it's a really unique cohort. So we'll have to see if we're able to secure funding to do that. But I agree. It wasn't all that surprising to me that they're doing, you know, reasonably well as they initially separate.
Thank you. Did you look at whether sleep problems were related to other domains of well-being?
You know, I haven't really looked into that yet. I think it's a great question, and I think, you know, I would certainly like to, but that isn't something I've had the chance to focus on. I certainly would not be surprised if I would not be surprised to find that they are a key factor for veterans.
Thank you. Can you provide the citation for the WBI tool?
Sure, I can. So, Molly, what's the best way to share that information? I mean, I was thinking that if folks were interested, they could reach out to me and I would share it with them.
We can do that, or you can tack it on to the amended slides you're going to send me, and then I can just upload it so it's in the archive catalog. Your call.
It's a Word document. Is that okay?
We don't want to add too much to the file because we want to encourage people to download it. So why not anybody that's interested in the WBI tool, please contact Dr. Vogt offline and she'll be able to send that to you. Thank you. The next question. So these were all OEF, OIF, OND, OIR vets. Were they all combat vets? How did you choose your sample?
Yeah, so great question. So these were all, post 9/11 era veterans. So these were not necessarily all deployed veterans. some of these folks, you know, had been in military service and they hadn't had a deployment, and many had. It was a fairly complicated sampling strategy, but I will say that we did two data polls, and our second data poll was everyone who had separated within the last 3 months, everyone coming out of military service. So we were able to essentially, our sampling frame was the population of folks who were separating at that time point in the fall of 2016. So I think, I hope I answered all the pieces of that question.
Thank you. What types of housing or homelessness measures do you have in the survey?
Yeah, so we have a question about, well, we have two questions. We have one question about what their current housing situation is, and then we have another question about whether they are concerned that they are at risk for losing their housing. And I can't remember what proportion of veterans reported that at baseline now. I recall it was a pretty small percentage of veterans, but we are tracking that because we know that that's an important factor. It might have been, I don't even want to throw anything out, but if that person wants to follow up with me, I'd be happy to take a look and share that information.
Thank you. Did you find that veterans that were not doing well in one domain cross over to the other domains? For instance, veterans with financial problems also had relationship problems?
So right now, we're actually running some analyses to try to identify different classes of veterans based on how they're doing across different domains to begin to address that question of how much of an interrelationship is there among how people are doing in different domains. And then one of the things we want to do is to be able to look at, you know, does how people are doing at time one in terms of their health, how is that impacting how they're doing in terms of other domains at time two and beyond across different domains. So we're really interested in kind of the intersection and the interplay among how people are doing in different domains. I don't have those results to share at this point, but that is definitely something we're going to be tackling.
Thank you. How did you determine that the sample was actually representative of separated veterans?
So, as I mentioned, we polled at one of our data polls was everyone in the military who was, or everyone who had just separated from military service. So we knew it was representative because it was everybody. So that's one piece. But then, of course, that was our sampling frame. Now, only a subset of those folks actually agreed to be in the study. And so the next analysis we did with our sample was to compare the characteristics of those who chose to be in the study and were in our sample to the characteristics in the sampling frame, the population. And so we've been able to look to see what, how many differences we're seeing in our sample and the larger population. And like I mentioned earlier, we're not seeing huge differences. There are some things we see some differences on. As I mentioned, the enlisted folks, they tend to be younger. They were slightly less likely to participate. So we're actually in the process now of finalizing our non-response bias weights so that we can make adjustments to enhance the representativeness of our study findings. You know, there's it's never possible to perfectly do that, but we are using the information we have to do the best that we can to represent the larger population.
Thank you. Was the sample pulled from all branches of the military, Army, Navy, et cetera?
Yes, it was.
Thank you. Do you include any questions related to suicide ideation, attempts, or general suicide risk?
We do. So we have a question, the PHQ-9, and I think it's the last question that asks about suicide ideation. And so we do have that information in the study at the first time point, and I'm trying to remember if we added to that assessment at subsequent time points, and I'm not sure that we did. But we do have some information about suicidal ideation.
Thank you. We are approaching the top of the hour, but we still have about 5 pending questions. Are you able to stay on so we can capture those in the recording?
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to.
Okay, thank you. If any of our attendees have to drop off when you exit the session, please wait just a second while the feedback survey populates on your screen and take just a moment to answer those few questions. Thank you. Do you have metrics in place to quantify and capture the differences that may present themselves between combat and non-combat veterans?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So I'm in the National Center for Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. I'm very, very interested in veterans' experiences of stress and trauma and how that impacts their health and well-being. So we included a number of different measures to get at veterans' experiences of potential stress and potentially traumatic events. So we've got measures of warfare stress, exposure. We've got measures of military sexual trauma. We included a measure of moral injury. And so I actually was just looking at these data and meeting with my team earlier today, because we're starting to do some analyses to try to better understand what is the impact of some of these measures of military trauma on veterans' well-being throughout the transition, and we're just starting to run those analyses. So I think it's a really important question, and it is something we're beginning to look at.
Thank you. We have a chaplain that just wrote in saying thank you for including moral injury.
Oh, sure. I'm very excited to. I think that's going to be really interesting to look at.
Thank you. The next question, what about the overlap between 85% saying that they are in the labor force and 27% who are students? How can so many newly separated already be enrolled in school?
Yeah. Let me see. That's a good question. I mean, I think that there are some folks who are in multiple roles, right? So they might have a part-time job, and they might be in school part-time. And I think some of that may account for that difference. Yeah. I would guess that it is folks that, because you can see that only 51% of the sample said that they were working full-time. So my guess is there's folks who have part-time jobs who are also in school. And there probably are some folks who have full-time jobs who are in school. So I think there's overlap.
Thank you. With regard to the WBI tool, my question is, has the tool been published in a peer-reviewed publication, or is the study team using a novel tool that has not been evaluated by the psychometric community?
Yeah, so the answer to that is we have evaluated it. So we've done a developed and validated it through a multi-study investigation with multiple samples and multiple examination of reliability and validity. And I didn't include those results here because often when I talk about psychometrics and measures, you know, unless you're a measurement person, you tend to be less interested in those results. But we have done that, and we have those results actually are under review. So we're hoping to have those published shortly, and I'd be happy to talk about those or share more information on what that process was, because we're pretty proud of the rigorous process we went through to develop and validate the measure.
Thank you. Have you attempted to use any clinical data to verify self-reported data?
I love to. So we've had a number of conversations with folks in the within VA about potential possibilities for pulling in some VA administrative data. So, you know, there are some things we're measuring here that it makes the most sense to rely on self-report. If you want to know how satisfied people are with their lives, you need to ask them. But there are other things that I think would really benefit from being supplemented by administrative data. So, for instance, you know, intensive information on whether people are seeking treatment and how often they're seeking treatment and, you know, what they've been diagnosed with and those kinds of things, I think, can be very beneficial to bring that in for those who are using VA care. Now, we have many people in this study who are not using VA care. So we're in conversations about whether we can bring in some of that data. We would love to be able to do that if we can.
Thank you. When considering well-being, did you consider including spiritual well-being? I do see that you have moral injury on the questionnaire. How is that being
considered? So it's a great question. You know, we in our measurement of well-being, we do have a couple questions that kind of are relevant. So we ask a question, you know, in our community involvement about whether people are involved in a religious or spiritual community. But we ultimately decided that spirituality was really, that we were going to conceptualize it more as a predictor of well-being. So we are including a measure of spirituality as a predictor, and we're going to look at how it relates to our different measures of well-being in the well-being inventory. But we don't have spirituality as a domain in the inventory. You know, it is a measure. Well, I'll stop with that, and I'll say that we are measuring it, and we are looking at it as a predictor of the things that we measure in the well-being inventory, but it is not an outcome the way that we've defined it.
Thank you. That is the final pending question at this time, but I'd like to give you a chance to make any concluding comments that you'd like.
No, I'm just thanks so much for everyone's attention. It's been I love talking about this project, and I appreciate all the questions. And those folks that had additional information that they wanted or that they wanted to share with me, I would definitely welcome you all to follow up, and I would love to have more conversations about this. So thank you so much. I appreciate everyone's attention. And thanks, Molly.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for coming on and lending your expertise to the field, and thank you to our attendees. I am going to close out the meeting in just a moment. For our attendees, please wait while the feedback survey populates on your screen. It's just a few questions, but we do look closely at your responses, and it helps us to continuously improve the program. So thank you again, everybody, and this does conclude today's HSR&D Cyber Seminar presentation. Have a good one.